At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only 10 bucks every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
We all know that owning a small business means you wear many hats, but sometimes you really need an extra pair of hands. Upwork is how good companies find great and trusted freelance talent. With more than 2 decades of experience, with the simple and ambitious goal of pioneering a better way of working, companies at every stage turn to Upwork to get things done and find more flexibility in staffing key projects and initiatives. They access a global marketplace filled with top talent in IT, web dev, marketing, and more. Posting a job on Upwork is easy. With no cost to join, you can register, browse freelancer profiles, and get help drafting a job post or even book a consultation. From there, you connect with freelancers that get you and can easily hire them and take your business to the next level. Visit Upwork.com right now and post your job for free. That's Upwork.com to post your job for free and connect with top talent ready to help your business grow. That's UPWORK.com. Upwork.com.
Oh, there was a part where they describe what the praying mantis alien looks like, and they just literally described a pug. They're like, its face is wide with wide set giant eyes. And I was like, you just described my pug Raisin.
Since the dawn of 2009, one TV show has dared to ask the most important questions about the origins of our world. That show is Ancient Aliens.
Yet until now, no one has asked the biggest question of all. Is Ancient Aliens total bullshit?
And that's what our show's about. Finding the truth under the nonsense of one of television's most popular franchises.
This is...
More like Ancient Phalians. More like Ancient Phalians.
Oh my God, more like Ancient Phalians.
They're all good.
I like all of them.
Thanks.
Yeah.
Each one of them seemed like it could be the intro for a different episode we've done. One of them sounded like Aliens in the Old West. One of them sounded like Aliens and Party Girls.
Yeah, Aliens at the Mall.
Aliens in the San Fernando Valley. Yeah.
That's right. You are correct, Natalia. This is more like Ancient Phalians, a podcast about the popular, seemingly endless, and never to be surpassed History Channel show Ancient Aliens. I'm Brandon R. Reynolds, a journalist who likes bugs in the proper dosage.
And what dosage is that, Brandon?
I don't know. You gotta get deeper into the episode before we find that out.
All right. I'm Toby Ball, the creator and host of the UFO podcast, Strange Arrivals.
Strange Arrivals. And today our guest is Natalia Reagan. Natalia is a true multi-hyphenate, not just a multi-hyphenate like singer, dancer, actor, but primatologist, comedian, burlesque connoisseur and performer, podcaster, former Spike TV impresario. What else? All kinds of stuff.
I definitely can't sing. So
no singing.
No.
Yeah.
And a bug enthusiast. I absolutely am a bug freak. Never met an exoskeleton I didn't love.
Right now, let's get into this show we're doing. It is season 7, episode 7, which is Aliens and Insects. Bugs are our little friends, but what are they hiding?
Oh.
And then we try and think of a thesis for the episode. What is it really trying to say? And what I came up with was, are insects aliens? Are insect aliens actually insect-human hybrids? Are insect-human hybrids actually just humans from the future who moved underground after a cataclysm and evolved into insects and then came back in time to warn us about said cataclysm and are named J-Rod? These are questions we will be answering in the course of this episode.
I love J-Rod.
I was actually a little thrown by J-Rod showing up.
Yeah.
I don't think I'd heard about him before.
J-Rod, an incredible...
That's a buddy comedy that I want to see, is the two, you know, guys working at Area 51, J-Rod and... Chuck, you know, just going on the lam. you know, collecting other praying mantises, love affairs, of course, with other insects. I can see a lot of potential here, you know. Of course, they take off in a Volkswagen Beetle to stay on brand.
There you go.
Yeah.
Not all episodes are great ones. I mean, all of our episodes are great ones, but not all episodes of Ancient Aliens are great ones. This one, though, you knew it was going to be good because right from the jump, Legends of Ant-Men. I mean, that's how it opens. People buried with scarabs. A quote, it's almost as if the locusts are programmed. I mean, I'm in it. Once I start hearing about programmable locusts, you can't say no to that. Then the question, of course, might all of these provide a link to extraterrestrials? We have to start with the Nile Delta in Egypt. In 2013, researchers discovered the dung beetles, the dungiest of beetles, follow the line of the Milky Way. You know, you always have to fact check these things. And in fact, it's true. There were some researchers in 2013, they looked at them, they simulated the Milky Way. This is not in the show, but they simulated the Milky Way with lights to figure out, you know, how they would follow it. And if you don't have too many other stars, the average dung beetle will move unerringly from one side of the Milky Way to the other. But it's really about how bright it is. Like it goes from more brightness to less brightness. So the dung beetle will move itself through space and time, rolling its little ball of poop.
Yeah.
It's a metaphor for us all, you know?
You know, we all know that shit rolls downhill, but I didn't know that they used the Milky Way to figure that out too. You know, I mean, it's really quite profound, right?
So at any given time, all dung beetles are moving in the same direction. Is that what we're getting out of this?
I don't think you see a lot of them at once. And part of the reason that these guys theorize that they follow the Milky Way is because you guys may not know this, but the dung collection is a very high intensity game. It's very competitive. You're a dung beetle. You roll out early in the morning to find the poop that's been left overnight. So you roll it into a ball. And the first thing you want to do is get it away from all the other dung beetles. Kind of like 3-on-3 basketball. You want to get that ball.
Yeah, hoard your crap.
Yeah. Got to move the brick.
No, you get, yeah.
Have you ever played basketball before, Brandon?
Have I ever played basketball, Toby? Yes. Don't let this intellectual exterior.
You take the ball. You get up early. You take the ball and try and keep it away from people.
Mm-hmm. That's basketball, right?
Is that what you do with your booty biscuits too? Do you like when you poop? Do you like actually try to take them, fish them out, and then sort of run into the woods to make sure that nobody gets a good gander at them?
I do that, but only because I'm too cheap to pay for plumbing in the house.
That's right.
So
it's a lot of water per flush.
Fair. I mean, in Los Angeles, where we've got fires every 2 seconds, we want to conserve the water, and I really do respect your dung habit. You know who dung it? It was Brandon.
The Temple of Karnak is where we're going now, and the god Khepri, according to the teleprogram Ancient Aliens, said ancient Egyptians were apparently fascinated by two things: one, the sun moving across the sky, it's a ball, and the other, dung beetles, aka scarabs, moving poop across the rolling desert of Egypt. They said there must be a connection here. It's got something to do with the sun god Ra, who has a chariot. And once you start hearing that, you know, they're going to start pulling some ancient alien stuff because pilots, ships, they're trying to say the scarab god may be an alien with the head of a scarab who came down and I guess passed him or herself off as a god? I don't know. It's, it's unclear. Did that make any sense to either of y'all?
Absolutely. It makes perfect sense. Okay. But Khepri, I feel like it's just interesting that they see this beetle, pushing around, again, these little booty biscuits. And they immediately think that this must be the thing that pushes the sun through the sky, as if to say that the sun is just a massive turd that, and that's what they do. So I felt like that was a commentary on their thoughts on the sun.
Yeah.
A little rude, honestly.
It did seem like, there was some sparse argument. Toby, did you feel like that cohered for you?
Did it cohere for me? I'm not sure where they come up with how Egyptians conceptualize the word pilot. Like is that a word that ancient Egyptians used? And if so, why? Other than that, it just all seemed to make complete sense.
Great. Well, then we're all currently on the same page as we move forward.
Oh, good.
because
I worship Khepri.
Great. Because if we can all accept that the sun is a giant turd, it's somehow connected to scarabs, and there's a
scarab-headed
gods who are also people. Aliens.
Yep.
As Giorgio Tsoukalos, once in Future Scarab, says, one has to wonder. Not one could wonder, but one has to wonder.
It's forced to wonder.
Whether these beings actually existed.
Yep.
Fair play. And then he throws in something about mutation and genes. You know, it's always the case that there's some engineering going on. So if that's the case, we have to go to funerary rituals. So then we go to the Valley of the Kings, Egypt, 1922. King Tut, who we spoke about previously, is discovered. He's wearing a breastplate. And the breastplate is a scarab made of silica. The silica came from the Saharan desert. It was glass that had been fused by a comet strike from 28 million years ago. And they turned that into a piece of that glass. They turned it into the breastplate. Why? And the person who answered that question is a former colleague of one Natalie Reagan, Sabina Magliocco.
Magliocco.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's amazing. Oh, yes.
Yeah.
She was on my thesis committee. Shout out to Dr. Magliocco.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Folklorist extraordinaire.
Yeah. Was she, when you were working with her, did she always have to like duck out of meetings because she had to go record an episode of Ancient Aliens?
You know, I didn't even know she did. I don't know when she did the first one. I graduated in 2011. So I wonder if maybe this was pre-Ancient Aliens.
Oh.
I feel like maybe... Yeah. We missed that window, but she is one of the more fascinating professors I've ever had. She worked in Sardinia. She is Sardinian. She's also, you know, does a lot of work about neo-pagan witchcraft. I mean, just fascinating, fascinating human being. and also a really great thesis advisor, I'll tell you that much. So, and a great professor. She was a stickler. I was going to say, I thought was interesting is we talk about the funerary practices and these beetles, and I think of the defleshing beetles, but none of these are the dermestids, the type of beetle that is used to deflesh, say, for instance, roadkill or just different animals that you want to get the flesh off of it because it's just easier that way. You know, sometimes they boil things like that. I have a lot of weird biological anthropologist friends. Shout out to Todd Disatel. Who's been on Ancient Aliens, who every time he finds roadkill, he either like feeds it to the defleshing beetles or, you know, boils it. I guess you have a special pot for that. You know, you don't use it for like the lobster boil later.
That's right. That's right. Yeah, no. Crab bake, no.
Yeah.
Does one just have a lot of defleshing beetles on one's person or in a room or?
Yeah, this is, I've got a lot of questions about.
Look, I don't know what you've got going on in your house, but I know I've got at least 600 just back in the kitchen, you know. Steve is the one that heads them all up. Steve is the main defleshing beetle. No, he's the main one. No, I don't know where actually one, like what there's like a underground or a black market for, you know, like does the dark web sell defleshing beetles? Like you can, you know, get your Dr. Seuss acid and then pick up some,
hell yeah,
you know, some pretty badass scarabs. I don't know.
It's very satisfying to think about. Every time I think about like putting a piece of roadkill or a head or something in there and then you like pull it out days or a week later and it's like a perfectly nice white clean, like that's weirdly satisfying to me. I don't know. It scratches an itch, makes sense. So I could see investing in that. I mean, I don't have a lot of roadkill, but you know, you want to have something.
I don't think I've ever picked up a piece of roadkill ever.
I've picked up, actually years ago when I was in Panama, I found a coati skeleton while I was doing field work. And I posted online. My other graduate advisor, Dr. Christina Campbell, her husband's a zooarchaeologist and he collects roadkill. And so she was like, oh, please grab that for Tom. And he wanted me to leave it or deliver it to somebody in Panama City. And I was staying in a hostel and I left it in a small duffel bag and I just left it at reception. And I said, whatever you do, do not open this bag.
Oh, no.
I don't know if they did, but it got to Tom. So we're happy.
Oh, boy.
But, yeah. Scientists do weird crap with crap, too. You know, you transport it and
take it how it goes.
I found the skull of a mole that one of my cats had. One of my cats kills animals and eats their heads. But I guess another cat had killed it. And there was a mole skull, which looks like a like baby saber-toothed tiger. Like, it's got these big fangs.
Sizers, yeah.
So I put that out on social media, wondering if anybody was going to push back, but nobody did anything.
I thought you were going to give it away. I was
got
like,
a couple of likes. Oh, you want it? I'm sure there's more. I'm sure there's more out there. Our cats just are killing machines when they're outside.
Well, Toby's got a defleshing cat, so.
Yeah, you don't need it.
Yeah.
Right?
You don't need beetles.
Yeah, but enough about my cats.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
So they're stringing together an argument such as it is. We know that they use scarabs in the wrappings of mummies. They take some leaps of logic as they do in the show. But this was one that I thought was interesting, which was the wrappings of the mummy replicate or symbolize or maybe just are literally the same thing as metamorphosis. Like animals create a chrysalis. So the mummy wrapping is a way of putting into process the transformation from dead pharaoh to whatever comes next. Beautiful moth pharaoh for the next life, which I hadn't heard before and seemed kind of cool and legit.
It made me think of Cocoon, the movie, and Wilfred Brimley, and the fact that he was only 50 when he was in that movie, which still to this
day. Are you serious?
Yes.
Isn't that horrifying?
Yes. Yes.
Think about?
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah.
But also, I thought it was kind of... I don't know. I feel like this could possibly be Steve Perry from Journey, who is from now, gets a time machine, went back, became King Tut, and died because the obsession with scarabs is so prevalent in all the albums of Journey, you know, and I can't stop believing that this could be the possible reason why they love scarabs.
You got through it. You saw where you were going. You were going to get there by hook or by crook.
I just watched the show and I kept thinking of Steve Perry and his weird scarab albums. Like I had a scarab ring growing up and I was obsessed with June bugs. Like most I've ever caught was 24. I was obsessed with June bugs. I still am. Like I have the 10 line June beetles. They look like watermelons. They weirdly come to my door and to die.
Are they as big as watermelons?
They're big. Yes.
California.
I don't Gallagher them though, but no, they're pretty darn big. They're bigger than the green June beetles. They're such fascinating creatures. That's all, you know, I understand why Egypt was enamored with them. They didn't have to even be a god to just be in love with beetles because they're such cool creatures.
Yeah. Well, and you know, there's not a lot of bugs out there. I mean, we go through kind of all of them. You got locusts and you got the locusts come through and they fuck everything up. So it's like, well, of the two, I'd rather the one that rolls poop away. That's a preferable beetle.
It's useful. Useful, you know?
Absolutely. This episode, more than any other, has a number of things that I really have enjoyed. One is there's a phrase that is spoken by, I think, the narrator at one point, which I'm going to have to recite because it's an extraordinary piece of rhetoric. And another is the juxtaposition of images. The first one is, you know, they're talking about how metamorphosis changes a bug into a different kind of bug, yada, yada, yada. And then there's a side-by-side, I don't know if you all remember this, of like this CGI bug that doesn't look like a beetle. It just looks like a blobby kind of like a tardigrade or something coming out of what looks like some sort of turd ball, side by side with an astronaut coming out of the hatch of what I can only assume is the International Space Station. No explanation about why.
No.
It's not like the astronaut was a space station or like went into the space station as some sort of lesser astronaut and then transformed inside the space station and came out a better astronaut that could fly in space.
It's metamorphosis. It's like Kafka right there. I mean, it's really quite beautiful.
I guess that was what it was. And then this goes even more wild after that. Eventually, we're going to hear about the ant people. But before that, we stop at Cambridge University in the year 2013. The Department of Zoology is studying a bug called the Isis. And they find out that it jumps really well because it's got gears. Its little skeleton or whatever's got little gears that roll together and it makes it hop. And it says, this is mechanical. This can't have happened naturally.
Yeah.
Natalia, you're a scientist. Do animals be made of gears?
I mean, this particular instance, this is the closest thing we can really see to gears. But I just think it's an interesting take on it when they say that, oh, this is like what humans make. A lot of the things that humans make are based on the natural world, you know? Mm-hmm. So I think that rather than being like, oh, they're just like us, you know, remembering that a lot of what we have created, and it's this idea of, you know, evolution doesn't have to be in the same trajectory. Like two things could have this, you know, birds fly, also insects fly. Does that mean that they're closely related genetically? No.
Yeah.
So, you know, certain pressures will allow for evolution to happen a certain way. So I just like that they have, you know, like it's like their booty is it got gears, you know, they
Pretty
got
cool.
like a spiky keister, you know, I think it's cool.
But then they also later they talk about the reverse thing, which is where, you know, we're now looking at animals or, you know, insects, whatever. When we're trying to develop new technology, we take a look at how, I can't remember what exact examples they use, but I certainly have read about like when you're trying to, you know, operate swarms of robots, they like try to figure out what the protocols are for like the birds that you see all kind of flying around in a choreographed fashion, like hundreds of them. And it's like, what are they looking at? How does that happen? And it's all about like kind of proximity and imitating the people right around you and stuff. And that's how they're trying to program little nano robots. But so it's like whichever way kind of makes the case for aliens, they're willing to go. Yeah. But
they haven't gotten to quite yet. They talk about how insects are a tinker toy set, all of this experimentation going on via evolution. Look at all the things they can do. They can taste with their legs. They can see with their butts. They can fly with their minds, whatever. and they say there's 1 million species, therefore they're the most mysterious. The suggestion is that they're very successful, which I agree with because there are a lot of them. And the most successful, of course, are the ants. 1 in 4 of anything, 1 in 4 individuals on Earth is an ant. So you look to your left and you look to your right, one of those people is an ant. Assuming there's two people to your
left.
What
about uncles?
Oh, no.
And then Natalia shrinks away.
Here we go.
From the microphone, never to be seen again. But thank you.
It's terrible. I did think it was interesting when they talk about the Hopi and their version of ant people, and they just look like ants. The drawings, they really just look like ants.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because they're like, we don't know if it's a hybrid. And I'm like, but maybe they were just drawing ants.
Yeah. They're around.
You know?
Yeah.
They are around. They are 1 in 4. And, you know, but I also am big on, we like believe indigenous knowledge and, or, you know, stories and take that into account. So if they want to say they're ant people, then I think it's cool. I'm into it.
But it also suggests, you know, as we find with every single episode we do, where they point a camera at a wall of a thing that somebody's drawn there and go, well, this is just a documentary fact that these people believe. Therefore, right. We should believe it as well, rather than like, well, maybe they're just doing art, you know? It could happen.
Right.
And speaking of art, this gets to the other, truly the greatest juxtaposition of elements that I have seen in this show heretofore, where you got Kritsky, can't remember what his first name is. But, you know, they're talking about the ants and they say,
in size and appearance, ants and humans could not be more different.
Which I agree with. And that's a brave statement for me to make, I think.
Going out on a limb.
Yeah, but then they say, but they're more like us than any creature in the animal kingdom, which, you know, if you know E.O. Wilson, you know, like, of course, the superorganism and social creatures. Right. We understand that.
They're eusocial.
But the way that he depicts it, or the way that the show depicts it, is going through some of the beats. So you have a social system. They're a social animal. And so there's another side by side, right? Here's ants marching on one side and people crossing Shibuya Crossing in Tokyo on the other. They say, and again, this is all by way of explaining how humans and ants are alike. So they're like, and of course, they have a reproductive queen, just like humans do. They show a picture of a lady hugging a kid.
That are much, much bigger than ordinary men.
She's a big hoe.
Yeah.
I mean.
And just like humans, there are males who live only to mate with the queen. which they show mating on one side, and then on the other side, close-up of a bride and groom holding hands in a wedding. Love that. There are, again, like humans, there are sub-reproductives that leave the colony and start new colonies, which is, again, people walking down busy sidewalks. There are workers, people crossing the street again. They've really gotten a lot out of the Shibuya crossing B-roll. And then ants lugging a cockroach. And then soldiers, it's army boys and ants fighting a bee. So that's all the ways that humans and ants are alike. We have giant queens. We have males who only live to fuck. Those are the fuck boys.
I love that. Yeah, go on.
And sub-reproductives who, I guess, leave the hive to go start podcasts or something. I don't know.
Incels.
Yeah. It is sort of incels, yeah.
Incels. Yeah. Excellent. Yes. Yeah.
So then we have a run of all these other cultures in which ants show up.
You're just going to skip over like them talking about Zeus like he was a real person, like doing experiments. They're like, could it be that Zeus was doing this? And there's like, there's no question at all about whether Zeus was actually something that existed and like did stuff. But the only real question is, was he doing genetic crossbreeding between people and ants? Mm-hmm. I mean, it's like saying, did Lyndon Johnson do something or something?
Question, though.
It was a stopper.
I mean, I hosted a Bigfoot show. So, like, you know, I know what people believe into some interesting things, right? Do people think that Greek mythology is real?
Oh, yeah. Well, ancient aliens does.
Okay. I guess so.
I don't know. I do feel like sometimes I'm not sure whether people are sort of taking it seriously ironically, or whether it's like tarot cards and stuff like that.
Do they have to come out of the closet? I'm just thinking of like, does someone sit you down and just be like, I got something to tell you, man.
Mm-hmm. I feel like we're pretty good friends now. So I just wanted to run this by you.
I need you to turn off Clash of the Titans and listen to me for a minute. I got some bad news for you.
I believe in the Greek pantheon of gods. I believe they are real.
It's not the weirdest thing if you think about, you know, like if you can imagine a group in the United States and their whole like political thing is we're classicists. We have a literal interpretation of the Greek pantheon. We think it was for real. They're out there. Why not? And then you talk about the Romans and they're like, fuck the Romans. That's all bullshit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They lifted that shit.
Original recipe.
Yeah. No.
Toby's an originalist.
God.
So you have all the cultures that have the ants talking to them, the Quran, ants are speaking like humans, the Zuni Hopi ants emerge from the earth, these ant people, they don't just look like ants, even though they do look like ants, but as Nutella, you pointed out, it just might be a picture of an ant. It doesn't need to be. Anyway. Clearly a merging of the human and the insect, says one of them, not simply a fable or a parable. Puts that aside. You got to remind people that this is literal, very literal. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, Sukalos says, I mean, he always asks the best rhetorical questions. Like, he's such a pro at this.
If one explores the question of insectoid alien life, then my question is, why not?
Why not?
Yeah.
Why not, Natalia?
Wow.
Why not?
I feel like that is, did he just gaslight me into believing that there are ant men? I think he did. I think I believe now and I'm scared. Wow. Yeah. Why not?
The takeaway, at least, I mean, this is, you know, a leap that makes sense is like, okay, ants have a certain look to them. They got a big head, buggy eyes. So then they finally draw the comparison to who else does that? The grays.
The grays.
But not just the grays. Yep. Certain people's pets also, buggy eyes.
My pug Raisin, who is quietly snoring, not quietly, very loudly snoring on the couch, very well could be either a praying mantis or an ant man, you know? She kind of falls into that sort of liminal space between the two. Do you want some pug ASMR?
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's see if we can hear some dog snores.
Yeah.
Raisin, say hi. Say to the nice people. Oh, there we go. Pug ASMR.
Raisin sounds a little unhappy.
That's just her breathing. Raisin.
Oh, that's just the breathing?
Yeah. She doesn't have a nose. Neither, you know what, doesn't also have a nose? The grays.
The grays.
Yeah. Raisin,
noseless.
I think.
Noseless.
I mean, that's why, like, Men in Black, they had those pug aliens. I think she very well could be.
Or at least some kind of hybrid. ASMR. A dog and
definitely.
A potato.
She also farts aloud quite a bit, like hefty farts. Like across the room, I hear them.
Don't think we've run across that in Ancient Aliens yet.
Oh, have they ever discussed whether or not aliens pass gas? Are they flatulent?
They haven't. I don't think I have never even heard of them discussing whether aliens have asses. They're not usually shown.
No, they don't show the back. They always show the front.
You see aliens from the front. They don't seem to have genitalia.
It's probing in the front, party in the back, as they say.
Yeah, that's, yeah.
Or they might say.
Okay, well, that's something to look into or maybe write in.
Asking the big questions tonight.
Excuse me, I've got myself a question. I do know some people. I worked on the History Channel. I worked on Unexplained. I'm going to put her down because she's going to keep making sounds that are very disruptive. Goodbye, Pug ASMR. But I worked on Unexplained and on Unbelievable.
Okay.
Those History Channel shows. I wonder if they get the questions they get. I'm just curious if they get. Well, I mean, I know that I get a lot of fan mail from like the Bigfoot show or any. I used to do a show called Paranormal Caught on Camera, and so I'd get a lot of pictures of like I saw this ghost goat in my like ring cam. Can you look at it and tell me what if it? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But I'm sure Ancient Aliens has gotten some booty questions about aliens. Yeah, and then you know I just made jokes too much, and I think because I didn't. You know, I was a skeptic and they're just, they want me to do ghost stuff. And I'm like, this is the most boring ghost I've ever seen. It's like moving bar stools. And, you know, they wanted to be like, oh my God, this is amazing. But yeah, the people that watch that show are very engaged and assume that you are a believer. And so you get interesting pictures and video.
Yeah, you're a good example of the kind of person who shows up, as we were talking about, on Ancient Aliens, where it's like, this is a legitimate person who's not a kook, who somehow has ended up on the show. Natalia, tell us a little bit about yourself, because you have had a fascinating career. You are a scientist of the primates. Tell me about that, and tell Toby about that.
Oh, goodness.
He doesn't even know any of this.
Yeah. Oh, sweet. So Toby, what's your favorite monkey or primate?
Favorite monkey?
Yeah.
Maybe golden tamarins.
Oh, that's a good one. The golden lion tamarin. Best hair out there. Yeah. And I say that as somebody I'm jealous of their hair and I've got good hair. But yeah, they're really cool. They were brought back from the brink of extinction during the 1980s and the LA Zoo helped participate. I studied spider monkeys. So okay. I'm a primatologist. I actually had a weird trajectory. I was acting and doing comedy before I became a scientist and always wanted to do it. But then just kind of wasn't doing so well in math and science in school. So I did the next best thing, which was comedy. Chasing monkeys is very similar. And, but I got hit by a truck as a pedestrian at 25. And that was the catalyst to go back to school. Cause I almost bought the farm. So I was like, you know what? I was a stand-in on a TV show actually at Warner Brothers across the street and thought this is not the life I wanted. And, I was obsessed with a gorilla that lived at the LA Zoo. And like he passed away and everybody was like, why are you mourning? Like, what's going on? I'm like, Caesar, the gorilla died. And that's when it was like, you need to go back to school. So I went back to school for chasing monkeys and I moved to Panama. I did my honors thesis on gorillas, but it was too dangerous to go to Democratic Republic of Congo when I graduated. So I pivoted and they sent me to Panama to do a survey of a critically endangered subspecies of spider monkey called the Azuero spider monkey. And so I spent, 3 months basically collecting data of where they were, literally counting monkeys in trees. It was 2010, so the same year that the US conducted our census, I was counting those monkeys in trees and gotten pelted with a lot of fruit. The females, fun fact, female spider monkeys have what is called a hypertrophied clitoris or pseudopenis.
Okay.
Or as Phil Collins would call it, a pseudopenis. I know, it's terrible. That's for your genital and Genesis fans. But yeah, so...
of which I am both.
So. Good. Yay. Okay.
Perfect audience.
Yeah. What is Susudio? I'll never know.
I have the foggiest idea. I was thinking about that the other day, though.
Were you? I'm glad that it crosses people's minds.
That and the Easy Lover and like the Phil Collins, like sort of dance music little moment he had.
Yeah. And the balding mullet was an interesting look that he like, you know what I mean? Like he was kind of like a sex symbol with a balding mullet. And I respect that.
And wristbands.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Wristbands.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
The 80s were a weird time. Yeah. But spider monkeys. And then I went, when I was finishing grad school, I started pitching science comedy television shows. And
like you
people
do.
Thought I was crazy. Yeah, like you do. And the first one was, I think, was called The Sordid Lives of Primates. And, you know, people like laughed out of the room. But a friend of mine was like, you have a camera, you perform, you write. Why don't you just make shit in your garage? And I did. And the first video was called The Story of Boobs, The Breast Tale Ever Told. And that weirdly didn't go viral or anything. But the Today Show had a slow news week and they Googled anthropologist and boobs. And they flew me out to be on the Today Show. And
really?
Yeah, it was crazy. And a couple of days later, Stephen Colbert made fun of it and was like, NBC, I saw you did a thing about boobs. What about butts? What about butt week? And so I did a rebuttal in like 24 hours. And this is like 2011. This is before iPhone. So I had to put together a little skeleton crew. But yeah, and it just snowballed from there. And then the Bigfoot show and Discovery, Nat Geo. I worked with Neil deGrasse Tyson on Star Talk, writing comedy for him and hosting. And but yeah, and now I just kind of make science funny.
It's the Lord's work, really. Or whatever you believe. Right. It's Darwin's work.
Where's Dolores? Dolores the clitoris. I have a clitoris puppet like one does. And she's across the room staring at me lovingly. She lost an eyelash, though, last night.
Oh.
Crazy night.
Working too hard.
But yeah, so she works very hard. She was at a wedding recently and they wanted to have her in the photo booth, but she was tore up. I think she had a big rip. And one of my friends who's an ER, she's a global health doctor, ER physician. She sewed her up.
Damn, that's professional.
She did a labiaplasty on my clitoris puppet. It was just glorious. So, yeah, it's a weird life, but someone's got to live it.
And a lot of this culminated in your live show, which is extraordinary. Survival of the Filthiest. Tell us about that.
Thank you. So yeah, I wanted to combine science and comedy. And I was pitching television shows and one of them was like a late night, you know, like Stephen Colbert, but, you know, Bill Nye had a baby and bloop, that's the show. And so I decided to do Survival of the Filthiest, which is just a science comedy show. The original one has a lot to do. It's Survival of the Filthiest, the totally wild, weird and salacious science of sex. So it's got ancient DNA, gay animals, the history or the evolution of the boobs, butts, balls, the clitoris, the baculum or the penis bone, boners with bones. A lot of primates have them. In fact, humans are one of the only primates that don't.
Missed out.
And if you do have a dick bone, you should get that looked at. But don't ask me. I'm not that kind of doctor. I'm not even a doctor. But yeah, and now I do it as a variety show here in Los Angeles, and it's got different themes. So you came to, you were at Women in Gender Queer History, mm-hmm. Brandon. That was that theme. And I did Science of Bowie. And the next one is this Friday, and it's Gays of Our Lives, because it's all gay animals all day long. So many queer weirdos, orcas, dolphins, lions, giraffes, you know. I don't know if there's any... bush cricket. That was the insect that I was going to include.
With a name like bush cricket, what choice did you have, really?
I know. Apparently, they have huge balls, too. Just like one of the biggest balls to body size. One of the biggest balls to body size. The animal with the biggest balls in the world is the southern right whale. Yeah, each testicle weighs 1,100 pounds. That's 2,200 pounds of silos of seed, like inside their body, you know? So thank God. I mean, if you imagine if they were outside their body, that'd be something.
That's a lot of drag.
Just dangling.
A lot of drag.
Yeah, right. Anyways, yeah. So,
Toby, do you have any questions to follow that up?
I have so many questions. So is that like what do you spend most of your time doing?
Crying. No, it's being in the science world and the film industry right now is a really fraught areas of the world. I do that. I do a live stream on YouTube. Also, I Survival of the Filthiest because I like to keep things simple but confusing. But that's more of a serious show. Even though it's called Survival of the Filthiest, I interview different scientists, educators, activists. I used to teach and I miss teaching. Like I actually just started tutoring, which I really enjoyed. It was so much fun. I was tutoring biology yesterday. And it's like going back and teaching again. I wish teaching paid a livable wage because I would love to do that. I really enjoyed working with a student.
Like high school middle school?
University.
University. Okay.
Yeah. So I teach biological anthropology and human variation. So, you know, like I also have a ton of hominin skulls back there, you know, like Australopithecus afarensis and Africanus. I've got Homo erectus. And yeah, so it was always fun to whip out the skulls and teach them all about, you know, our human origins and genetics.
Oh,
and,
interesting.
Yeah. So I mean, I really love my field very, very much. It's one of those things where I wish people, you know, especially what's going on here in Los Angeles, like just understanding, like one of the things I always tell my students is migration is such a huge part of the human existence. Like we're always looking at, you know, out of Africa, how did we leave there? How did we get into the Americas? How we're always moving around, you know? And so this idea that we would just all of a sudden create these weird boundaries and borders, and it's ridiculous. I could go on, but I won't bore you with.
Well, you know how we got around back then.
Was it on a flotilla of ants? Because they discussed that in this episode.
That's a pretty good transition into where we're going next, which is the Kalahari. We've been talking about ants. We've been talking about the grays. Now we get into this idea of the trickster god Kagan, the San people in the Kalahari. They picked them out of a hat, presumably, because they have a mantis god who taught them language and gave them fire. And one of my favorite Ancient Aliens regulars, Childress, who is incapable of not driving me nuts, has the quote, you've got to wonder,
is this praying mantis extraterrestrial god just some mythical figure? Or is he really a representation of some kind of real praying mantis insectoid alien?
That's profound.
You've got to wonder.
I don't know. Then, so we have the idea, we are introduced to a woman named Linda Porter, who had an abduction story in Covina, California in 1963. She's pulled up on a ship. It's a very familiar tale. The grays examine her, but one of the grays takes her down a hallway, and then in this chamber, this giant mantis alien who the show posits, he must be the boss because he's tall. That's kind of their takeaway.
That's so rude. It's so rude. I mean, it's a short person. I find that okay, tall person.
Yeah.
Rude.
Yeah. Well, the mantis has got to stick together. The mantids. Did you know, Toby, did you know this story about Linda Porter?
I absolutely never heard of this before.
No, I hadn't either.
Yeah.
They did say that in the show, 1963 was before the abduction phenomenon became popularized. I don't think that's true.
I think it may be, because Betty and Barney Hill were 61, and then their story didn't really get out for about 2.5 years, 3 years. So it's really like 64, I think, that it became sort of more like out there for people to find out about. But of course, she wasn't talking about until she was 45. Mm-hmm. So the fact that it happened to her in 63, like they don't talk about whether she was talking about it in 1963. Yeah. They just say she talked about it years and years later. So, I mean, who knows?
One thing that the mantis aliens, according to Linda Porter, are here for, and I think, Natalia, you'll appreciate this because I feel like it's the same reason that you do science comedy, is that the aliens are concerned about our souls. We have an animus. And it's mysterious to them. Where does it go at the moment of death? That's why they have humans in these cocoons or these tanks on the ships, because they're apparently in suspended animation trying to, maybe they're trying to deflesh them with some kind of device to pull the soul out.
They just need to get on with Kefri. I don't know why they're not talking. I don't know why they don't, you know, get each other on the line.
Exactly. So that introduces the idea of, okay, we've gone from insects are potentially gods that came down as aliens and influenced the course of human events in Egypt. Maybe there are hybrid human insects that were created by aliens as a second mode. And then insects are here inventing gears or whatever. The narrator says, ancient astronaut theorists say further clues revealing the connection between insects and aliens can be found where it can always be found in the Holy Bible. Why? Because you have the 10 plagues. Three of those plagues are insects. Mm. So that means that the tools of, I guess, God, or at least the Hebrew God, he really leans on the insects as a way of sending a message, I guess.
That's how I send messages. Sometimes. I don't know about you. Yeah. Like anytime I have like a breakup, you know, like a just a plague of locusts.
Plague of locusts.
You know,
yeah.
Just a, yeah, yeah.
I do like when they accidentally stumble on something fascinating. And in this case, they talk about the difference between grasshoppers and locusts. which
is actually, strangely, a question I have had.
Yeah.
And never bothered to look
it's
up.
It's wild.
They're like mob mentality insects, like lemmings, like, Steve's going that way. Let's all go.
Yeah. Grasshoppers are solitary. They keep to themselves. They enjoy their treats. And
I do what I want.
Yeah. They do their thing. And so you have a bunch of grasshoppers together. And when times are good, they're all just doing their thing. But then if there's a boom and bust cycle, there's like a flood and then everything grows up. And then there's a drought after that. So all of a sudden resources get constricted. And the grasshoppers are actually forced together in tight proximity and actually undergo these morphological changes, which they think have something to do with the grasshoppers rubbing their legs against the legs of other grasshoppers or grasshoppers biting each other's legs.
Mm.
And that starts this flood of serotonin that changes their bodies in weird ways. The grasshopper becomes more gregarious, more willing to swarm. They love to swarm. They get together. It's like party atmosphere. Obviously, serotonin, we all know, is a party drug.
Yep.
And just like when we get into party mode, grasshoppers, too, will go from green to yellow. And, of course, just like people, their wings lengthen and they become stronger and more inclined to insert themselves into biblical narratives. That's true.
That is.
Isn't that weird?
So they start off as grasshoppers and then because of physical conditions sort of morph en masse into locusts.
Environmental conditions force them to change into this thing that rather than being individual and sort of isolationist, they become sort of populist, I guess you could say. And like many populist movements, they create destruction across the land.
Wow.
Well, quite honestly, if I was an Egyptian back then, I would find this quite disturbing and mysterious.
I would do whatever I could to make the environment so hospitable for grasshoppers that they would never feel the need to locust up. You know what
you
I mean? Like, I feel
up.
Like, no. And I feel like it gets like four locusts or something. Is that a terrible?
I love it.
I don't even, it's so
energy
bad.
Drink, but, yeah, four grasshoppers called four locusts. And then they.
Is that just
sick of nuts?
Turn. Because if you describe, like, it's like a rave, like these like swarms are like.
Yeah.
You know, like they're like. Yeah. It's like they're Burning Man. Mm-hmm. They're just like, fuck yeah, let's go. Let's go to the desert. Let's the pestilence. Let's go. Yeah. Mm.
Gets them out of their
That's
show.
Good. That's good stuff.
So we'll get through the rest of this episode because it just continues to be weird along this vein. They postulate that the locusts in the Bible, particularly in the book of Revelation, are attacking the people who aren't marked with the mark of God on their forehead because they were engineered or programmed to attack others. So maybe now insects are not actually aliens, but are perhaps weapons created by aliens. That takes us to DARPA HQ in Arlington, where, as Toby said, we find out that GPS was developed, not by bugs. Stealth was developed, not by bugs. But drones and all of these, quote, biomimetic weapons were inspired by insect stuff.
Biomimicry.
So they wire a beetle to fly around with a remote control. Pretty wild.
Yeah. I feel like the whole seal of God, like if that was happening and they were only attacking people without the seal of God, I would have really gotten into the seal of God temporary tattoo game.
Hell yeah.
You know,
could sell
like
those.
I would have, it would have been like, that would have been the way to go. Like every time you know that they were kicking up, they were getting their four locusts on, you know, just get yourself a seal of God temporary tattoo. Hey guys.
So one of the researchers, a guy named Vanek, says,
in the not too distant future, you're going to sit there and go, wow, what a beautiful insect. Maybe it's not an insect at all.
Words to.
What if it's your mom?
Yeah. And then that leads to Toby and I have been down a lot of roads in this strange journey of ours together. But I feel like this is the strangest phrase that has been uttered heretofore in any episode that we've covered. The narrator says, to tie it all together, but if we can produce insect drones today, Natalia, and he does say Natalia, is it possible that the biblical stories of locusts sent by God are really accounts of alien technology in the ancient past? And could this be the reason why insects are feared by humans even to this day? Toby, that is an incredible, structure.
Gets to the heart of it, though, right?
I want to point out that 2 billion people across the world eat insects, so we're not that afraid of them.
That's a good point.
Yeah, eating insects is, and it's sweeping the nations again because there's a, you know, food shortage in many places, and it's a great way to get protein is cricket powder. I prefer not to eat the insects personally, except the accidental ones when I'm running. But yeah,
I feel like I eat things that I fear sometimes.
Oh, go on.
Meatballs. Toby and I were having spaghetti one time, and he started screaming at a meatball.
What?
He was terrified of a meatball. We're at an Italian place. You're like, give me the spaghetti and meatballs. They bring out exactly what you asked for.
No, not the meatballs.
And then you just start shrieking.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Because I'm afraid of meatballs.
Because for some reason you did not think a meatball was what it was.
I'm curious. Are you guys afraid of bugs? Do bugs creep you out?
Some.
Not really. I mean, there are situations in which I wouldn't do something because there are bugs. But I'm not like afraid of like a praying mantis or something. I mean,
I had one, I named it Gordon. I called it Gordo for a while.
Gordo, the praying mantis.
Gordo, the praying mantis. They were, I mentioned it earlier. I do a praying mantis burlesque routine.
Yeah.
You know, based on sexual cannibalism. And that's also what I was wondering about these aliens is, do they have sexual cannibalism? Are they just mantis in appearance only, or do they have some of those behaviors? But not all species of mantis actually engage in eating the head of their lover. And not every time.
It's weird they don't ask about that, though. Yeah.
Yeah, it was weird that they didn't bring that up because that's one of their more iconic things they're known for. You know?
It's probably couldn't find a painting of it on a cave wall anywhere.
Or a corollary.
You guys, what are you doing this weekend? Yeah. Let's go.
Yeah,
let's paint
right.
some praying mantises on a wall.
Eat each other's heads.
That would actually be, could lay some clues down for the ancient alien folks.
It's good trolling.
Yes.
Just outside of what's his name's house. Was that, was the end of his, why not?
Why not? My question to you is, why not?
Why not? I think that should be a question in most things in life when like, should we go shave a ferret today?
If one explores the question of shaving a ferret, then my question is, why not?
Why not?
Wrapping up, we have to end where so many ancient aliens things end up. Area 51. The year is 1953. It's not the desert crash that you think it is. It's a different one. In 1998, a guy named Bill Uhouse came forward to make a stunning claim that there was an actual living alien who had crashed on Earth, ostensibly, and had been working with the United States government for many, many years to presumably reverse engineer the UFO. There are twists and turns aplenty in this. The first is that this alien's name was J-Rod.
See, this is 100% a psyop.
J-Rod.
This is when they had Paul Benowitz and those guys, and they were telling him that the alien they had at Area 51 really liked ice cream, and that his like favorite flavor was strawberry. And they're just saying all this shit to just see if he would like repeat it on national television, which he did.
Oh my lord.
I just have to feel like this is the same
J-Rod
thing. It's like, will you say ridiculous, idiotic shit if we feed it to you?
Yeah.
Is this pre-A-Rod? Because I wonder if like, well, you know, one stole A-Rod? From the other. Yeah. Like,
well,
I wonder
like,
if this
well,
is,
he was,
are they related?
He was dating J-Lo.
J-Rod
so
was?
I think
oh
it's
my
probably,
God,
yeah.
This is their couple name.
Oh, that would be the couple
yeah,
name.
Yeah, it's J-Rod.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh my God, that's hilarious. Okay. Now we know how he got his name. Yeah.
Yeah.
Which makes sense because the other big twist, you say to yourself, you think you've got a handle on all of this. So you got a handle on this. This is an alien from another planet. I can handle this. Is it an insectoid alien? Who fucking knows? It doesn't matter. All I know is that he is from space. Maybe he was a god. Maybe he rolled poop across the sky. We don't know. No. In fact, the truth of the matter is that J-Rod, according to some other dude, a microbiologist, was like, yeah, listen, here's the thing. J-Rod is not an alien. He's actually a dude from the future. In the near future, you guys don't know this, there's going to be a catastrophe on Earth.
And much of mankind is destroyed. And that mankind splits into two different species.
Some of them go underground and, as happens, they evolve into an alien-like species, which, by the way, this is the story of the book, The Time Machine. So somehow they go underground, they evolve into insects, and then it's unclear how they develop time travel technology, but they do. J-Rod packs up, comes to Earth, crashes, works with the human race, presumably to save us from this catastrophe, or just to date? I don't know.
But does he believe in the Greek pantheon?
Does he believe in the Greek pantheon?
Did he come out about that too? Did he come out?
We don't know what happened to him. You know, they don't say he went back to his future, because why would he? It sounds like it sucks. So he could be walking amongst us to this day.
I might have dated him. I don't know.
Did he have insect eyes?
Yeah. You could practice some horizontal gene transfer, which is sort of the last thing they land on, where it's like maybe insects are giving us their genes via bites or whatever.
I'm so flattered, you know, like how nice of them. Like, I do feel like J-Rod brings up a good point, though. And it makes me think of the Mesozoic extinction, or the KT event, when the asteroid hit off the coast of the Yucatan and destroyed all the dinosaurs, or did it. And, you know, essentially the things that did survive were the small mammals and insects. So I don't know. I kind of wonder, and some of those mammals were like ancient possum. I could see us kind of becoming this sort of weird hybrid possum creature, you know, a little shrew, little shrew face, you know, or a mole. Like a naked mole rat, but with human legs. They don't get cancer. Fun fact:
the teeth.
Naked mole rats. That's right.
They're and they're eusocial as well. They have very strong social structure, like ants, and they look like pink penises with teeth.
Do they have fuck boys in their society, like the ants do?
They do. They do. Yeah.
Do they?
I don't know if to the, what extent. I don't. I'm not a huge naked mole rat connoisseur, but again,
the night is young. There you go. So the episode leaves us as confused as we were before, with only slightly more knowledge about the way poop moves from place to place. And it asks, or at least it allows us to ask rhetorically, so is it insectoid aliens that we're talking about, or is it human-insect hybrids, or is it future post-apocalyptic humans that we're really dealing with? The question of whether they have a secret purpose, we don't know. And then it concludes with, maybe aliens don't just inhabit the furthest reaches of space, as we all agree they do, but perhaps there are billions here on Earth, right under our feet. And it ends with the cutest ending of any Ancient Aliens episode, an adorable ladybug who spreads her little wings and flies away.
I love that.
Yeah.
I do call, the Beatles visit, I call them the visitors, because I do wonder if they, like, hold the nuclear codes or something, you know? Like, I feel like we don't have to create our own little spy insects. I feel like they're doing it already. You know, they're collecting data. They're like, oh my God, did you see Stephanie down the way? I mean, she's a mess, you know, like just talking mad smack.
You think they're judging you too?
A little. I mean, there's certain, the mantises for sure.
The way they turn their heads around and look at you.
Yeah, they've got that side eye. Whereas the Coleoptera, you don't really know where their eyes are looking. So it's like, you know, a little bit of a woo. Yeah.
Yeah.
So a little bit.
I'm sorry that won't translate to audio. That demonstration.
It's a cross-eyed thing. And then she went bumbling into a wall and she fell into a flower and took a nap. That's how it happened.
And I'm back.
Yeah. Natalia.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for being on this program with us today and for taking us through your life and all of your knowledge of things that eat the flesh off of other things. And various and assorted things about things that have penis bones and don't. Your ideas about dating in a post-apocalyptic future. It's been a delight.
It's been great being here. You guys are awesome. And I feel like we need to get Giorgio on and Sabina.
Yeah.
Yep.
Make it a party.
For sure. Tali, where can people find you if they're looking, which they should?
Well, it depends. Lately, a protest. No, you can find me on Instagram at Natalia13Reagan. And I also have a YouTube channel that I have my weekly live stream, Survival of the Filthiest. That's Natalia Reagan. Look me up there. And come check out some of my live comedy shows. So I make lots of, you know, fun animal videos, but the live shows are even more fun.
They are incredible.
So let's talk.
They are like nothing you will ever
thank
see.
You.
This has been More Like Ancient Phalians. I'm Brandon R. Reynolds.
I'm Toby Ball.
And we'll see you next time.
Next time on More Like Ancient Phalians, Janet Varney returns to help us untangle the cosmic spaghetti of UFOs, deadly cults, and trickster gods. Did ancient aliens inspire Heaven's Gate? Or are we just worshiping the same old gods with new names? Plus, the cult of Snoopy, the God Helmet, and why some ancient mysteries are best left to 13-year-old dungeon masters. We're talking about Deadly Cults, Season 3, Episode 12.
More Like Ancient Phalians is produced by Heather Eagle Ears Wilson, and the music is by Nathan Reedy.